Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
This is Yannick Noah.
This is Vicky Spreadbury from Cambridgeshire in the UK. And for discussion more dazzling than Stan Wawrinka's French Open winning shorts, you are, of course, listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and thank you to Vicky Spreadbury in Cambridgeshire. Lovely intro there from Vicky. She's a long-time backer and supporter of the podcast. So thank you very much, Vicky, for your support and for the time and effort and diligence that's gone into that intro. This week's weekly pet mascot is the lovely, lovely Bentley. He's a 19-week-old Hungarian Vizsla. He is the nephew of last year's Tennis Podcast mascot, Butler. And we'll be telling you more about Bentley at the end of the show. David very politely said, Catherine, should we do just a little bit on Bentley at the start and leave your big sort of monologue about Bentley to the end? Because people actually tune into this thing for tennis chats sometimes.
She's seen right through me, Matt. Oh, I can't believe it.
Less and less do they tune in for tennis chat.
In hopes of achieving even more tennis chat this week than in our last show, Billie Jean has started the recording in the pen. In order that interruptions are kept to a minimum.
I was a bit taken aback when I found out she was in a pen, and then Catherine described the circumstances of the pen to me, and they sound a lot better than I was expecting. In fact, I want to move in.
Yeah, I could nap in the pen, yeah. Put it that way. I could happily take a nap in the pen. It's great in there. I mean, she would far rather be involved in the tennis podcast recording, but I think as much as we had some lovely messages about last week's show, I think we'll let everybody off the poo-related interruptions for at least a week, shall we? You heard that, Billie Jean? Yeah, good girl.
Thursdays can be poo-related.
So, she's crying. I shouldn't have said her name. Just put up with a little bit of whining in the background. She knows she's being talked about, you see. Right, your big plan to get into the tennis chat earlier than last week, David, has been foiled.
Marginally successful. 3 minutes, we're in.
How are we doing, folks? I feel like that's an important question. At the moment, we've all got to ask ourselves and one another how we're doing, aren't we? I mean, obviously, broadly, the answer is badly because, you know, the world is in the toilet. But in the context of that, how are we doing?
All right. Yeah, I'm delighted that tennis is back. I have to say, I have felt a little bit like Matt on a first day of a Grand Slam the last few days.
Particularly have you?
Particularly today with the Australian Open qualifying properly underway. Trying to follow that. I mean, I think it depends where you are in the world as to where you can watch it, whether you watch it on a TV channel or whether you watch it streamed through the Australian Open website. But I mean, you know, you go on the Australian Open website here and there's just 20-odd courts to try to keep across, and they don't actually tell you who's on each one until you click on them and the window opens up. And then on...
Yeah, it's like a big surprise, isn't it?
Yeah.
who's going to be in the box?
And then you've got Abu Dhabi tournament, you've got Delray Beach in the evenings. There's so much going on. And this is before we even get to Melbourne 1, 2 and 3 with different names on them that we found out about the other day.
Yes, more of that later, folks. I've been chastised by my father and multiple people on the internet for not being well versed enough in Gippsland.
Yeah.
But there will be a Gippsland section of the podcast to compensate later on today.
And how's Matt?
Yes, how's Matt?
I'm fine, thank you. Yes, I'm also enjoying having tennis back. It's provided some real structure to my days, which I needed. I've been watching mainly Abu Dhabi and enjoying that a lot. And yeah, it's weird because normally the start of the season has so much momentum behind it. I'm very aware that in 2 or 3 days' time, it's all going to stop again and we're going to be left tennisless for a couple of weeks. But we have some exciting plans to fill those weeks, so I think we'll get through them. And then knowing that the Australian Open is not too far away is very helpful indeed.
Yes, more of those more on those exciting plans later. We're doing a lot of, or I'm doing
we
a lot
are.
Of teases, aren't I?
Yeah.
I didn't intend for that, but there we are.
This is worth,
tune in.
It's worth teasing, though. Stay on, all right?
I promise you, the Gippsland chat might not be worth staying on for, although it will be, obviously. God, I've annoyed Gippsland residents again already. The Gippsland chat's going to be great. Hang in there for that. And the chat about what's coming in the next 2 weeks, I promise that will be good as well. But let's start in Abu Dhabi. That's what I've watched the most of as well. Watched a fair bit of Abu Dhabi, actually, and really, really enjoyed it. I think the level of tennis has been really good, actually, by and large. As you commented, David, in our last pod, after having watched just a day or so of it, the most notable thing is that muscle memory about closing out matches seems to be a little bit absent in some players. Not Maria Sakkari, but pretty much every other player. This morning, we've just seen Sakkari get the better of Australian Open champion Sofia Kenin. Billie Jean and I was snoozing through that because I thought that match was on a little bit later than it turned out it was actually on. Can somebody fill me in on what happened?
Well, Matt watched most of that, didn't you, Matt? Now, when I tuned in, Sofia Kenin had got off to a flyer, and next thing I know, it was over. Tell us about it.
I tuned in at 6-2 to all, and Maria Sakkari won the next 10 games in a row to close out the match, finishing it with a 6-love set. And I didn't see the Kenin Azarenka 6-love, 6-love last year, but I kind of feel like with this match, I know now how that Rome match went, because obviously this match turned mid-match, whereas that one was kind of a disaster from the start for Kenin in Rome. But suddenly Kenin couldn't find the court. Sakkari was asked in her press conference whether those last two sets were two of the best sets she's ever played, and she said, "I played well, I was good, but it wasn't my absolute best by any means. I certainly was helped by my opponent." It is curious how that can happen to Kenin, because she's so methodical and she earns everything. I don't think of her as a player who necessarily will get thrashed a lot, but she can have these sudden periods where she really struggles. Probably don't need to read too much into it, because I mean, the last time she did this, she then reached the French Open final in her very next tournament. If anyone's got experience of recovering from a match like this, it is Kenin. But on the other hand, Sakkari continues to impress. She'd already beaten Muguruza, Goff and Potapova, I think, without even dropping a set. And she seems to have really taken some steps. I loved the phrase she used to describe her tennis. She said she felt like certain parts of her game were asleep and now they've woken up. And I think she was really talking about more aggression. She's hitting the ball so big, so powerfully. And she kind of reminds me of Kerber a few seasons ago, where she came out at the start of the new season looking better than ever. And Sakkari is looking like that to me.
Mm. Has she improved her serve?
Yes,
Sakkari?
I would say so. I went back and looked at her stats on serve last year, and she's kind of in the top 10 for aces and first serve points won, that kind of thing. She has always had a good serve, but it's really noticeable how many aces she's hitting, especially. I think she's in double figures the last couple of matches and really does seem to have improved. Yeah, I would say so.
In terms of Kennen, I watched all of her match yesterday against Yulia Putintseva. And there were patches in that where she was really struggling to find her range. It looked sort of quite worrying again, sort of like the dimensions of the tennis court weren't quite programmed into her mind correctly. And possibly she was let off the hook a little bit by Putintseva. One of the running themes throughout the two matches were consternation from her opponents about her father's behaviour.
What is her dad doing? Because, I mean, there is a screenshot of Maria Sakkari looking like she's shushing him at the end with the finger to the lips as if to say, there you go, shut up, mate. Now, I don't know whether that's what was going on, but he does appear to wind people up, and I wonder what it is that he's actually doing.
I think he's doing what Billie Jean's doing right now, which is just making a whole lot of noise.
Yeah.
For which I apologise, folks.
Talking during the points, I think, was
really
what Sakkari was getting a bit annoyed at.
Wow.
Yeah, well, what Putintseva asked the umpire during the match yesterday whether Kennen could request to her father that he speaks in English rather than Russian so that the umpire would be able to monitor what he's saying or whether it counts as encouragement or coaching. So we had this long train where sort of Putintseva goes to the umpire and say, can you ask her to ask him to speak in English, please? And then she does. And actually, Kennen took that on the chin better than I'd have thought. She seems to be so used to her dad being a figure of irritation, shall we say, that she kind of shrugs it off now. But he winds people up for sure. And now I get the impression it's at the stage where players, teams are walking onto court, sort of keeping an eye on him.
Yeah.
Umpires as well. They are very conscious of what's going on in her corner. Is he going to come and sit uncomfortably close to me?
I'm also mindful that she is a big deal now. She's won the Australian Open. She's reached the French Open final. She's also getting under the skin of opponents by being bloody good and beating everybody and getting results that maybe they think that they should be getting and things like that. So
I think that's a big part of it. I think a lot of players look at Kennen and think, I could be that.
Yeah. I am mindful that I don't want this to turn into some sort of bullying. Not that I'm not saying it is that. I'm not saying it's that they may well have a perfectly fair gripe there. But I do feel that Kennen sometimes, I mean, you know, she's changed her management company. I think she's almost ripe for being slightly separate and slightly isolated from the group. And not wanting to just get along with everybody, not worrying about that, just wanting to beat them all because that's what she regards tennis as a sport. So that's something I want to keep an eye on. Two things. I don't understand how somebody who seems that good when she's under massive pressure and match point down, like she was against Putintseva, loses 10 games in a row against Sakkari today. I don't really understand. I'm trying to work out how do you go from one to the other of being this incredibly big moment player and then seemingly just capitulating. And the other thing, just on Sakkari, she does feel like one of those players that's had this in her over the period and with her physique and her athleticism, and yet there's a voice in her head talking her out of being what she could become. And maybe she's just found a way to quieten that voice down and just take charge of it, you know. And she is going to be fascinating over the next few weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. She will play Sabalenka in the semi-finals tomorrow. Sabalenka is doing what she does, which is having a really great week at a time when the tennis tour will inevitably stop her momentum ahead of a Grand Slam, but only for 2 weeks, of course. So maybe this is the time for Sabalenka. Maybe I should do what I did 2 years ago and predict that she'll win everything.
It's going to be
again.
Fascinating that to see how many people get convinced of this being the moment, because I could very much imagine that 2 years ago, this is the run that would have made me go all in. And now I have real doubts in my mind.
she has at least managed to carry on the momentum she had from the end of last season into this season. I think she's now on a 13-match winning streak when you take it all into account. What I would say on her is she's played... I've not seen a lot of her matches this week. They've been on really early here. But she's played quite similar opponents, I thought. She's played Jabeur and she's played Rybakina, who are both similarly aggressive. I mean, obviously, Jabeur's got a lot in her game, but mainly she's an aggressive player. And I do wonder whether Sakkari might be able to extract a few more errors out of Sabalenka, make it not a pure hitting contest, because when it does become one of those, Sabalenka is fearsome. So
that's going to be a very interesting match, isn't
it? Yeah, I really think so. Just on Kenin, did you see that strange thing that happened on Twitter this week?
No.
You could be talking about any number of things there, Matt. That is a broad church of a question.
Well, she tweeted about her new Motorola sponsorship partnership and said, I'm delighted to be using a Motorola. And, you know, on Twitter, it says what device you've sent your tweet from. It said Twitter for iPhone. which she then deleted that one and put up another one with a, you know, sent from Motorola or whatever it was, Android. I thought that was quite amusing.
That is great, isn't it? That must be, I mean, surely that's happening all the time.
Oh, yeah.
If anyone wants to send us Motorolas, that would be fine. I did drop my phone on the floor this week. It's got a crack across the screen that's annoying me.
This is breaking
news. It has
news,
got a really
folks.
Rugged cover on it, which protects it usually from the many tumbles that it takes.
It's already survived the toilet.
Yes, it has. But it's survived this. It's just going to be a constant source of irritation in my life for the period up until I can be bothered to buy a new phone. So, that is Kenin. Just before we mentioned Ons Jabeur there, David's been speaking to Ons Jabeur. We've got a really nice little interview with her in just a moment. But just finally on sort of results from Abu Dhabi, Karolina Pliskova, it was 4 days ago that we were saying, God, it's going to be really interesting to see how Karolina Pliskova gets on early in the season and her teaming up with Sasha Badgin. It's not going well so far.
No, she lost to somebody whose name I've already forgotten.
Casanova.
Yes, okay.
I can't remember her first name, but it's a lot like Casanova. It's Casanova with a G. That's how I'm remembering it. But I none of us had ever heard of
Casanova. Well, it was
Casanova.
6-2, 6-4, wasn't it?
Oh, no. Matt, hang on.
No, I hadn't.
Right.
Anastasia Casanova from Russia. That's about as much as I can tell you, other than she's 21 years of age, ranked 292 in the world, and in qualifying, she beat Mona Bartel of Germany, 6-2, 6-4.
Is she your femme du jour for 2021, Matt?
No, but we will get there.
More of that later, another tease for you.
I think she was even able to enter the qualifying in Abu Dhabi because so many players have gone to play the Australian Open qualifying. So a lot of the people in the Abu Dhabi qualifying were ranked lower than you would normally expect. So she kind of took advantage of that opportunity to even get in the draw. And when she won, the WTA put up that it was her first ever top 100 win, which, you know, is a slightly strange way of describing Pliskova, who's obviously a top 10 player. But that is true. She had never beaten anyone close to Pliskova's calibre. It's early for Pliskova. Perhaps she's taking a different approach and not peaking just before the slams this year. You know, normally she starts the season brilliantly, doesn't she? I think she's won Brisbane multiple times.
If that's the plan, it is being executed to perfection.
Imagine that conversation. Sasha just goes, look, right, Karolina, just be rubbish this week, right? Don't sort of tank, but just be rubbish generally and then be brilliant at the Australian Open. There's my advice.
I'm going to be very eagle-eyed, both for myself and for all of us and everyone that we take on in the Australian Open predictions about what we all do with Pliskova.
It's always a problem section, isn't it?
It's a problem section. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, we don't need to make Pliskova-based predictions just yet. Let's hear from Ons Jabeur, shall we? She's such a great talker, such an interesting woman. And David caught up with her just ahead, just on the eve of the tournament in Abu Dhabi, and started off asking her about her off-season.
Tell us what your off-season has been like this year compared to previous years.
A different one. I was home a lot this year. I went to such an amazing place back in Tunisia with the amazing Ashley weather and working with the whole team. So I think the amount of work that I put in this year was much, much more than the previous years. I'm proud of the way I handled my preseason. I feel like my body is getting used to this hard work and to be honest, reacting much better. Before I used to do the least effort and I get injured, but now I feel like my body is reacting really well, and I'm super proud of myself and the hard work I put in. Especially now I think differently. I think that I need this type of work to achieve my goals, and to be honest, I cannot wait to start playing the tournament here in Abu Dhabi.
What changed, Ons, to make you realize that you needed to work differently, harder?
Well, I've made a lot of mistakes. I listen to my body. I listen to myself. I try to understand much more what I want to and what I want to achieve. Before I used to just listen to whoever is talking to me and just go and play. Now I feel like I'm more focused with myself, which helped me a lot to be a different player. Because after all, I'm by myself on the court. You know, I'm the one who's making the shots. I'm the one who's trying to change the mood. If I'm angry, I try to be more relaxed on the court. I have the team that I always wanted to have besides me, the team that listens to me, that wants the best for me. So this was really important for me.
I often think about this when I watch you play tennis as well. Because you have so many shots, you can do so many things. How do you package that into a formula that can win every time you play, or at least as many times as you play? Is that a challenge for you?
It was a big challenge because before, like I said, I didn't understand. I had so many shots, and sometimes it was kind of hard to just take the decision and do a drop shot or just hit the ball, you know. But now I understand more with the stats. I read much better the game. I understand more myself, so I know what shot I choose, which was more easier for me. Plus, my coaches helped me a lot to actually have a certain tactic on the court. And you know, I like to surprise players. I like to do a different shot every time. I think, which has helped me to be a different player. And sometimes you don't know how to play against me, which I like, and it's in my advantage.
And you had a fantastic year last year, obviously disrupted by the pandemic and the halt of tennis. But you had the great start to the year in Australia, quarterfinals there, lots of other quarterfinals as well, big match wins. But what do you feel is going to be the next step for you to go beyond those quarterfinals and reach some of those goals that you've set for yourself?
Honestly, I'm going to use the experience I've learned. All the quarterfinals I did in 2020 will probably help me to go further this year. I had a really good start of the year, and the COVID was not easy for everybody, but I still keep I'm still positive on the court and outside the court. I always still try to check what's going on and what did I do wrong in the other matches. Pretty sure I know exactly what I've been missing in the quarterfinals that I lost. I try to improve my fitness to be more ready to go further in tournaments. But I feel like I'm ready. I'm ready to win titles in 2021.
Really, what do you feel you're capable of if you play to your best?
To be honest, that's my goal. That's my goal to win titles in 2021. I know I have the level two. I know I have more patience now to do that. I know my ranking could be better this year. It's not an easy mission, but I know it's not impossible.
How do you handle bubble life, Holmes?
It's tough, but we are getting used to it. I'm trying to enjoy my time outside the bubble to be ready and take a deep breath and go into this bubble life. I mean, sometimes we keep busy. Usually, I'm not the type of player who goes out a lot for dinner. I'm usually lazy and want to stay with the room service. But you know, when now you know you don't have the freedom, you know, everything changes in your mind. But it's okay. I mean, it's the bubble life for everybody, and I think I kind of got used to it.
What are your expectations for the logistics of Australia, getting there, the quarantine? How comfortable are you with what you've heard about it all?
Well, it's very strict, but I understand they want to protect their country, and they kind of doing really well with the COVID right now. So I understand this, but I mean, it's for everybody. Like I said, I'm gonna be ready to like use those 2 weeks to be ready for the tournament. It's not gonna be easy, obviously, but I mean, I'm gonna be ready and hopefully try to start in Australia much better than last year.
Well, if you do much better than last year, you'll be doing really well because you're already a quarterfinalist. I was looking at your Twitter bio and profile, and it says the words dreamer, wife, daughter, sister, crazy about football.
Yep.
In what way are you a dreamer?
I dream to be number one. I dream to be a Grand Slam champion. I dream to make history. I dream to inspire a lot of Arab women, a lot of women in this world. So yeah, that's my dream. I'm a dreamer since I was a kid, and for me, to achieve your goal, it always starts with a dream.
Sure, I've seen some of your football tricks as well.
Yeah, I love football so much.
Did you ever consider football as an alternative career?
Honestly, I wanted to play football before, but I had to choose either tennis or football. But I had this crazy idea that I should start just like not a very professional league, but play like a few matches per year with my tennis career, so I can like enjoy and do. Because football, I really, really love football, like sometimes even more than tennis.
Well, that's great. And I've seen you do your warm-ups before your tennis matches. Just as a final point, you mentioned how you feel about being an Arab woman with all the achievements that you've had and the pride that gives you. Just give us an idea of that pride and how you feel.
Honestly, it's an honor for me to represent a great nation. I know there's not a lot of Arab women in tennis, but I still try to inspire and give the example. Hopefully, I give a good example, I give a good image, and nothing is impossible. Hopefully, I can inspire many more other Arab women, and it's such an honor for me to represent them.
That was a really nice interview. She's super cool. She's super cool on Strip. I love that she embraces and invites the pressure and what some would consider the burden of representing not only herself but also women and Arab women. You know, we talked about it a few episodes ago, didn't we? Touching upon Billie Jean King and the Battle of the Sexes and how Margaret Court had played her own Battle of the Sexes and said, "I'm not representing women. I'm just representing me." And Billie Jean King had embraced and taken on the mantle of saying, "Yes, I will. I'm playing for women everywhere." And you know, there's not been that much of that in tennis over the years. In women's tennis, it's an increasingly individualistic sport and pursuit. And somebody standing up and proudly standing for something more than herself. It's wonderful. I love hearing from her. That was really really nice.
She is. I really enjoyed speaking to her. There was no hurrying along or making you feel like she hadn't got time or anything like that. And I was in a line of interviews. I mean, I was the last one of a few, and she handled mine in the same way as everybody else's, with just a great attitude. But I think also it strikes me how much psychology is involved in this sport. And I mentioned Zachary earlier. Somebody who's got all these skills and weapons, but can she get out of her own way? Can she find whatever it is in her mind that will allow her to play her best? Now, you mentioned Jabir there, and I remember Nick Kyrgios back in Australia when the bushfires were going on. He'd worked out in his mind that he was playing for the people suffering, and not everybody can do that. Not everybody can carry that around with them, that sort of other responsibility. But yeah, she is one of the coolest people I've spoken to in tennis, I would say.
And I think it'd be just fantastic for tennis if she does achieve some of those goals and dreams she was listing there.
There was a difference about her to what I was expecting, and not just in my interview but in the press conference she carried out. I remember last year we were talking about her and how much we love watching her play and all these things she can do, and I went very strong and said I don't ever expect to be saying that Ons Jabeur is in the mix for a Grand Slam tournament.
Oh, the mix?
In your lifetime, I think, were your words, David.
Yeah, and I she made me feel differently by talking to her. Now, that I just feel that there's such determination in her to maximise and fulfil her potential and to realise her potential. And she believes her potential is top 10 and winning titles. She was so specific about winning titles. Now that, as I say, can go two ways. That could either be the pressure that makes it hard for her to relax and play her best tennis, or it could be the driving force that makes her win, as opposed to just playing well.
Matt, Ons Jabeur in the mix to be in the mix?
A sub-mix. Oh, my goodness.
Sort of gateway mix.
I love even that, though, that she lays out her goals, you know, very openly and concretely. And, I mean, I understand why players don't do that, but I love it when they do. Top 10 and titles, that to me feels very achievable for her.
Yeah, and it's a marker of confidence, isn't it?
I think
so. That a player's prepared to lay out their goals, because you're saying, I'm prepared for you to judge me by this yardstick. I'm prepared for you to know if I don't achieve my goals. I often think when players are unprepared to, that comes from sort of a place of fear, very understandable place of fear. But yeah, that interview made me excited about Ons Jabeur and what might be coming from her. I mean, what's coming now is 2 weeks of 2 weeks of sitting in a hotel room. Do we know who she is teamed up with?
No.
In the quarantine bubble.
I have learned one more.
Oh, yes. Hit me.
Rybakina and Andreescu.
Oh.
Which is pretty great, I think.
Yeah.
Just you saying Andreescu as being a tennis player that we now can think about again is a very exciting prospect.
In fact, we do know more than that, don't we? Because we've also had the news this week that there's going to be a separate quarantine for what Craig Tiley has described as the top men's and top women's players in Adelaide. And that is going to be linked to an exhibition to be played by those top players. Now, it's going to be the top three players in the world on the men's side, Djokovic, Nadal and Dominic Thiem. And on the women's side, the top three players would be Ash Barty, Naomi Osaka and Simona Halep. But of course, Ash Barty doesn't need to quarantine because she's already in Australia. So it'll obviously be the next top ranked player in the world. It's going to be Serena Williams. so it'll be Simona Halep, Serena Williams, and Naomi Osaka quarantining in Australia, in Adelaide rather, and playing in this exhibition over there. Now, there are reports, and Jeremy Shardy has spoken out quite strongly about this, as reported by Simon Briggs in The Telegraph. There are reports that the quarantine situation in that mini bubble in Adelaide will be rather more favourable than those quarantining in Melbourne. The hotel's going to be nicer. The restrictions in terms of the amount of time they're allowed out of the hotel to train, and the facilities that they have, gym in the hotel, etc., are significantly preferential to those available in Melbourne. And there are also reports that the entourage allowed to travel with the players will be expanded to 4 per player, whereas in the Melbourne bubble, each player is restricted to having only a team of 2. I asked Sophia Kennan about this yesterday, and she wasn't being drawn on it. She said, you know, I'm just focusing on myself, and quarantine's going to be hard, but, you know, I just have to accept it. But I can tell you, if I were Sophia Kennan, I would be stomping my feet about it. I wouldn't be happy.
If it had been billed as three of the biggest named players in the world, men's and women's, rather than the top 3, would you have been okay about it then? Because, I mean, Serena Williams is the biggest name.
Slightly more okay about it. Look, I mean, I just feel like there's a slight deception going on in terms of why this is happening. I suspect that some of this group of players have said, I'm unprepared to, I won't travel to the Australian Open unless I can bring my family or my team and physio, etc., with me, unless I can have access to a gym in the hotel. And because of the star power and the significance of those names, the Australian Open, Tennis Australia, they've wanted to make that happen. And I understand that. I understand why they want to make it possible to have the biggest names play at their tournament. I want that as well. And I also understand that, you know, tennis is never a level playing field. Sport isn't a level playing field. There are haves and have-nots. And, of course, the most successful, richest players in the world have access to things that those less successful don't. And I would be more okay with it if that was just sort of being said. But maybe it can't be said. I don't quite buy this whole, well, that there were too many people quarantining in Melbourne, so we needed to create an extra quarantine space elsewhere to accommodate, you know, these 50 more people. Well, if those people quarantining in Melbourne, it wouldn't be 50 people. It would be a lot fewer because the entourages would be smaller. I just can't believe that sort of 20 people out of, you know, more than 1,500, which is the number of people that will be coming in for the Australian Open, is what's tipped it over to the edge into needing an auxiliary quarantine space.
I dare say it's a bit of all of these things. There clearly are pressures because of that hotel that has now no longer made itself available to them because of the issues they had with the residents there. But I think that in trying to find a space for a few more people, they have recognised an opportunity, certainly. And Adelaide have said, if we run an exhibition, we'll, you know, you get these players here, we'll accommodate them. So I'm sure there is some of that. The other thing is, Craig Tiley did say to Tennis Channel that the quarantine rules are not different. I mean, whilst the hotel might be of a different level, the players still have to stay 5 hours a day or can only have 5 hours a day outside of their hotel room. So what Jeremy Shardy is saying, Craig Tiley very much refutes.
But if you have access to a gym within the quarantine time in the hotel, that is quite a different kettle of fish, isn't it? As I said, that is not, none of this is absolutely confirmed, and the entourage size, that is also quite a, the entourage size seems to be quite a significant difference to me when you think of the sacrifices that some people will be making, and also in terms of, you know, the leg up that gives people. You know, there's a lot of people that have become very used to and rely on traveling with a physio, their own personal physio, that won't be able to do that. And you could say these players, you know, with their success have earned this preferential treatment, but I wonder what Andy Murray thinks about it.
That's the bit that would bother me if I were a player. It's not just about what you physically earned and made available to yourself to hire people. It's just if the rules are different, then that's a problem as far as I'm concerned in terms of the number of people you're allowed to have. Mm. So it'd be interesting to see how that comes out.
Yeah, we'll wait and see what happens in Adelaide. I do think there's an element of when Craig Tiley was speaking, he talked about Adelaide have just built this brand new stadium, haven't they? And it's cost tens of millions, and the South Australia government have put a lot of funds into that. And you know, we know how significant the governments in Australia are in terms of supporting tennis. And I do think there's a kind of, you know, we need to give them a boost after what they've invested in this stadium, and being able to lay on that exhibition is certainly a boost. So I get all of it, as I say. I just feel like, or I get most of it, but yeah, we'll see what ends up being the situation in Adelaide. In terms of Australian Open qualifying, that's got underway. Men's in Doha, women's in Dubai. There's only been a couple of days of matches. Nothing particularly major to report so far, other than I would just like to touch upon an article I read on the BBC Tennis website by Russell Fuller about a British player called Francesca Jones, who is ranked 241 in the world. She's 20 years old, and she is playing the Women's Australian Open qualifying in Dubai. She's actually just scored a victory over Monica Nicolescu, the David Law of women's tennis, in the opening round of qualifying, she's a tricky customer, Nicolescu, for an inexperienced player. That's quite a win, I'd say, even if Nicolescu obviously isn't quite at the ranking heights that she once has been at. But Francesca Jones is quite extraordinary. She was born with three fingers and a thumb on each hand, three toes on her right foot, four toes on her left. This is her first overseas Grand Slam qualifying draw. The condition is called, and please bear with me here, ectrodactyl ectrodermal dysplasia syndrome. And it's a rare genetic condition which often affects the fingers and toes and often requires adaptive surgery. I think she's had a number of surgeries over the course of her life so far. She was told that she'd never be able to play tennis. She sounds like one of these Andy Murray type people that gets all her fuel from being told the things that she can't and won't ever be able to do, which I just love. But yeah, she also came through the Sanchez Casal Academy, just like Andy Murray did. She went there at the age of 10, which is extraordinary. She says, when someone does say to you at 8 or 9 years old that you can't do something, I suppose most people would be heartbroken, but I just tried to take it on the chin and see how I could prove that person wrong. She plays with a light racket and a really small grip, it says in this BBC article. And she says in the gym, she works hard on balance and technique. Her feet do not always move the way other feet do, so she has to be precise to avoid injury, which appeals to her perfectionist instincts. I think it's just extraordinary.
Yeah.
An extraordinary story.
Great story, and really fascinated to watch her progress. But as you say, already a notable win. Good for her.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll keep you posted on other notable events in Australian Open qualifying. Over in Delray Beach, they are at the quarterfinal stage. Cam Norrie's in the quarterfinal there. He plays Francis Tiafoe. Sebastian Korda also in the lineup, the young American son, of course, of Peter Korda. John Isner is in the quarterfinal lineup, and Christian Harrison won the Battle of the Christians, beat the top seed there, Christian Garin. He also had a flag put on one of his Instagram posts, did Christian Harrison, for being Trump-esque in its misleading and unverified claims.
He also put a hashtag on one of his posts saying, defund the media, which younger brother of Ryan Harrison, should say. I mean, just
presumably, I mean, so he put that out via social media.
Yes. Right. Putting all that aside, just tennis wise, I mean, he's just had his eighth surgery over the last year. The guy's gone through it physically, incredible amount of setbacks, and younger brother of Ryan. I think in the final round of qualifying, he won in the final set tiebreak. So it's a big deal for him to have had these wins and you know, beat a good player like Christian Garin.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
In Antalya, the semi-final lineup is set. It is Alexander Bublik. Unclear whether he's been snapped up for a training partnership during quarantine. We'll try and get to the bottom of that. It's Alexander Bublik against Jeremy Shardy and David Goffin against Alex Dumanoir. Those are two quite nice, interesting matchups for their semi-finals. We can't watch it, but We have had verification that it is happening. This tennis is happening. People are seeing it. The results are real.
In fact, I think Dumanoir has already beaten Goffin now, if I'm right.
Has he? No. He just beat Basilashvili.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's right. That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is up to date as of now. I mean, it won't be up to date when most of you are listening to this. If you're listening and he has just beaten David Goffin, then ignore everything I've just said.
When have I ever been up to date?
So that's what's happening in events this week. There have been a few other bits and bobs of news. We have had the news that Alexander Zverev and David Ferrer have ended their coaching partnership, or rather it seems like David Ferrer has ended the coaching partnership. He was the one to announce it. He told Punto de Break. Am I pronouncing that right, Matt?
Yeah, Breakpoint.
Yes. Yes, thank you. He said, I told Sasha that we were not going to go forward next season. It was not for anything special. Absolutely nothing has happened between us. Everything is good. I appreciate the opportunity he gave me to travel with him during this period. During these months, we had a good collaboration. Everything was perfect. Perfect.
Mm. Mm. Well, I mean, that's three very big names from the tennis world. Former players that David Ferrer has had in his corner, sorry, that Alexander Zverev has had in his corner in the last 4 years. Juan Carlos Ferrero, former world number one, Ivan Lendl, former world number one and coach of Andy Murray, to Grand Slam title success, and now David Ferrer. And they were both talking, particularly Zverev, incredibly positively about the collaboration late last year. So, you know, it doesn't, in terms of trying to build something and continuity as a tennis player and as a force, I don't think it bodes well to be having all these changes.
Mm. This was a very different statement to the ones we've seen in the past. I know that Ferrero and Zverev, we heard about an argument they had at the Australian Open, and Ferrero gave some very public comments about Zverev's punctuality and things like that. And Zverev had a little pop at Lendl saying he was spending too much time playing golf and with his dog. And Lendl said that Zverev had some off-court problems. So this is quite different sounding anyway, publicly, but the pattern is the same. It's a short relationship with a high-profile coach. It's obviously, it's not a great time to be associated with Zverev, given the allegations against him and his handling of those allegations, which we've talked about. But I think more than anything, it's a difficult environment as a coach to go into, given Zverev being so close to his family and them so involved in his tennis. And, you know, we've seen it with Wozniacki, didn't we? She had so many coaches, but none of them really stuck. And it was her father who ended up staying there the whole time, and it worked for her. She achieved pretty much all of her goals, I would think, in tennis. So it can work, but if that doesn't change, I struggle to see how bringing on more coaches is going to work more successfully in the future. It just feels like this is probably just going to keep happening if it's happened three times already.
Mm. Might also make it harder to attract.
Mm.
Other coaches. We've also had the news that Diana Yastremska, a young Ukrainian player, has been provisionally suspended after testing positive for mesterolone metabolite. It's an anabolic agent. She tested positive on November the 24th after providing a urine sample to the doping control people. She was informed of the outcome by the ITF, of course. She was charged with the anti-doping violation on December 22nd, and her provisional ban came into force on January the 7th. We understand that she chose not to challenge the provisional suspension. But she has said, quote, "I firmly state that I have never used any performance-enhancing drugs or any prohibited substances. I am astonished and under shock, particularly given that 2 weeks prior to this test, on the 9th of November 2020, I tested negative at the WTA events in Linz. After this last tournament of the year, I stopped practicing to rest prior to the start of the new season. Only a very low concentration of mesterolone metabolite was detected in my urine. Given that low concentration and given my negative test 2 weeks earlier, I have received scientific advice that the result is consistent with some form of contamination event. Besides, I have been informed that this substance is meant for use as medication by men and that women are not advised to use it due to the adverse effects it causes." So, yeah. Slightly odd statement from Yastremska, but she loves an odd statement, doesn't she? Does anyone want to come in on that?
I mean, no. Yeah, it is an odd statement. And it's one of a number of odd things she's done and said in public over the last year, at least as far as I can see. As to the case itself.
Nice new turn of phrase we've got, though. Billie Jean is partial to a contamination event as well. So, unclear whether she will have to miss the Australian Open. It depends when her hearing date is. Of course, you get the provisional suspension whilst you await your hearing date. We're not sure when that will be. But as it stands at the moment, doesn't look like she'll be able to play the Australian Open.
But I'm a bit confused why she's chose not to challenge the provisional suspension. Anyway.
So, other bits and bobs to wrap up before we take this show off the road. Matt, who is your femme du 2021? The people are on the edge of their seats.
Yes. Well, you did say it didn't have to be a fam.
Oh, yes. Yes. I mean, whoever it is, I will keep calling them your fam do 2021, just for my own amusement, regardless of their gender.
But I must say, it is a fam.
Oh, good. Okay.
I did actually consider Sebastian Corda. I watched some of him in Delray Beach. I think he's got game. I like watching him play. I think that's an important factor in this. I need to enjoy watching them play if I'm going to invest
some time. How much do you enjoy watching Kuzmova play?
Well, as I said, I'm learning from that experience.
We should also say Matt is the first person who ever introduced the name Iga, at the time Swiatek, and now Świątek, as we now know it to be, to my attention. I'd never heard of her, really, until Matt mentioned it.
Also, thanks, David. Very early adopter of Carlos Alcaraz.
Yes, I considered him, but we've already talked about him. So
yes. Also, is this going to be a complete unknown?
No, it's not. It's not, to be fair. It's okay. Actually,
it's probably a bit early to go on Alcaraz, isn't it? He might be a 2022er. Anyway, so I'm spinning this out, X Factor style.
I so much thought you were about to say it's a bit too early to go on alcohol.
No, it's past midday. Come on, Matt.
Okay,
who's it to be?
Well, it is Marta Kostyuk.
Oh, this is the ultimate recency bias. Oh. You've literally just watched her win.
She was six love, one love down moments before we started this podcast, and I had prepared.
When it became apparent to him that this is the woman.
I'd already decided, and I thought, oh my God.
Did you have a backup?
Corda.
Sara Terribes Torba.
It is a little bit recency bias, but the match which most sticks in my mind with her is when she played Osaka at the US Open last year. Really good round three match. She's obviously most known for reaching round three, I think it was, of the Australian Open as a 15-year-old. She was the youngest player since Hingis to get that far in Melbourne. That was 2018. But she's struggled a bit since then, and she's given an interview just now on the WTA website talking about how crippling those expectations were for her when she was so young. And she said she went through a period of depression trying to live up to her own younger self in a way. She found that really difficult to handle, but she's let go of that now and she's in a much better place. She's a really interesting talker. She played Su Wei Shea the other day and was talking about how much fun it was to play her. She said, I even did a tweener. You know, she was just loving that match. And most people don't like playing Shea, but she seemed to embrace that. But mainly, as I said, she's a fun player to watch. No two points are quite the same with her. I watched pretty much all this match today against Sara Cerebes Tormo, and she's so proactive, and she kind of reminds me a bit of Bencic, the way she hits the ball, very smooth ground strokes. She likes to come forward. She's currently ranked 99, so there's plenty of room for upward trajectory, which is all we're really looking for. So she's my new Kuzmova, someone to keep an eye on this year and enjoy watching play. And as I said, that match against Osaka at the US Open last year, she really showed what she's capable of. So more of that, please. And now she's into the semi-finals in Abu Dhabi already. So it's already going well.
So you see, Matt's helped. actually, have you noticed as well, Catherine, the way he's picked somebody who's ranked around 100? So she'd have to not do so well for it
he
to be.
He also just slipped in there. There's room for upward trajectory, which is all we're really looking for.
Yep.
So if she ends the year 98 in the world, you're going to claim that was an accurate pick.
I'm like Ons Jabeur. I'm laying out my goals for you all to judge me by.
Right then. I mean, I'm sold. I'm sold on Marta Kostyuk. Other bits and bobs to wrap up. We have Kyle Edmund out of the Australian Open due to an ongoing knee injury. I have heard reports that he had surgery on that knee. Not quite sure. It's something which has been troubling him for a while. It's just another disappointment heaped on, frankly, what's been a couple of years of disappointments for Kyle Edmund. A really, really challenging period of his career. So so bad news for him. We, of course, have residents of Gippsland everywhere who are owed an apology and a wholehearted thank you for setting me straight. Gippsland, Gippsland, Gippsland. My dad said he couldn't believe I didn't know about Gippsland. Of course, my parents spent a couple of years living in Australia, and apparently it's all you hear about when you live in Australia, Gippsland. We've had people send photos. It looks lovely.
It does.
I mean, what I would give to be in Gippsland right now, you have no idea. Yeah. If I could.
And now you get to watch the tournament.
Now, except the tournament isn't actually in Gippsland.
No, it's not there, David. It's in Melbourne.
It's brought to you by Gippsland.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's inspired by.
Yeah. So
at least we know about it now because of that.
Yeah. And it turns out they have a thriving tennis podcast community.
Yes. all of whom are mortally offended now. But I hope I've made up for that somewhat.
Yeah.
So Gippsland, thank you and congratulations on being great and lovely. We don't have much time for this, but we have people have been sending in their wishes, their 2021 tennis wishes.
Do that on Monday.
Do that on Monday. Okay. Wishes can wait.
It's Monday today. Do it on Thursday.
Oh, we are so on top of it all. So on top of it all. Yeah, we got another tennis podcast coming to you on Thursday, which will wrap up the week's tennis that we've seen. Look ahead to, 2 weeks of quarantine. We'll do quarantine predictions. We will hopefully have more news of partnerships coming away. And as discussed, we'll be doing our tennis predictions and wishes for 2021. After that, of course, there will be a 2 week hiatus of tennis while the tennis world quarantines and while we go back to a state of despair. But you needn't go back to a state of despair, dear listener, because we have got something pretty big in the bag to bring you for those 2 weeks. Well, certainly for week one, which is an interview with Billie Jean King, the human. Yeah.
Correct.
I don't know what to say about it. I did the interview. I did it this week. And
I'll say something about it.
Yeah, I don't feel like words can do it justice. I still haven't quite processed the experience.
No. Well, I mean, you say, what are we going to do? We're going to be in despair for 2 weeks. No, we're not. I'm just going to listen to this interview a few times. I thought it was going to be amazing that we would get the chance to speak to Billie Jean, and Catherine's the one that got that opportunity, and it is wonderful and inspiring and illuminating, and I found out so much that I didn't know about, and we asked for an hour, we got nearly three. it was just the best experience I think any of us could imagine. So we'll package that up and we're going to bring to you Billie Jean King Week the week after next. And so I'm sure you'll enjoy it just as much as we have.
Yes. And folks, Billie Jean did meet Billie Jean, and I won't say too much about it, but it was the earth moved. So that's next week, Billie Jean King Week. We've got one more podcast about live tennis to bring you before then. Then it's Billie Jean King Week. Then it is Australian Open Relived Week. Da da da. And then tennis resumes again with the Gippsland Cup held in Melbourne and various other cups and trophies and opens.
Classics.
Named after places that they're not held in, which we're all very excited about. So that's it for your first podcast of the week, except that this is the little portion of the show where I get to talk about animals and David can't do faces at me saying we need to be talking about tennis now. Bentley is our weekly mascot. He is brought to you by lovely Russell and Brad, two of our most loyal supporters over the years. Hello, Russell. Hello, Brad. Hello, Bentley. We've been sent some pictures of Bentley. I mean, he's a 19-week-old puppy. He's an absolute joy. I mean, knowing what I do about puppies, I'm sure he's not 100% of the time a joy. But, yeah.
She can hear you, you know.
Russell said, Bentley is potty trained and there's hope for Billie Jean.
Oh, the words I was so hoping to hear. could you go back to Russell and get a time scale on that potty training, please? So hello, Bentley. Hello, Russell and Brad, and thank you for being our weekly mascot. We'll have more of Bentley in our newsletter. Rogue is David's mascot. They've been having some Twitter interaction this week.
Rogue.
Yep. Zeus,
Rogue looks
mine.
Really cool, actually.
Once again, I'll remind you, King of the Gods. And Scousel Mousel, ready to be back in the limelight with Matt.
Yes.
Although Scousel Mousel's got to share that limelight with Marta Kostyuk now.
Yes.
And maybe
already
Sebastian Corda, depending on how
he
does.
An early blow for Scousel Mousel. Yeah.
At least Scousel Mousel has delivered for the last 2 years. And so, you know, we utterly trust Scousel Mousel.
Yes. Chris Albert Lee is our executive producer. And as discussed previously, top bloke. Top bloke, Chris Albert Lee. So thank you for your support.
100%.
And we have shout outs. Matt, take it away.
We do. For Matt Collins.
Hi, Matt.
Relative of Danielle.
Related to our Matt.
That's not how that works, David. Hello, Matt.
Hi, Matt.
Kate McCulloch.
Ooh. Scottish?
Hi, Kate.
At least some ancestry,
We've been through this before. I have no more information than you do about these names.
Honestly, you'd expect some background, wouldn't you? Anyway, Kate,
Hello, Kate. Thank you
so much for your support.
Thank you.
And finally, to Noonie Towel.
Oh, Noonie. So same first name as Carter Noonie, the umpire.
You're trying to draw
I'm trying to do a tennis. Trying to bring it back to tennis, David.
How do you spell Carter Noonie?
I think it's
N-O-U-N-I.
Yeah, no, this is not that.
Oh, well.
N-U-N-I.
Okay, surname?
I prefer Anooney anyway.
T-A-L.
Oh, Noonie Towel. That could be a famous person name.
Yeah, well, it could be. Mm. Now, well, is famous now. Hello,
yeah.
Noonie.
Yeah.
Thanks ever so much.
Yes. Hello, Noonie. Yes, thank you. And yeah, that's it. I've got nothing else. So we'll be back on Thursday with more tennis podcasts. Thanks for listening. Matt, David, thank you. Ons Jabeur, thank you. That was cracking. And we'll see you on Thursday.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.